Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back, 12 after. Carlos Santana on guitar there. One of the best. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, I'm one of the best, too. Right, Joan Pride?
Excuse me? I missed that, Jim. I'm sorry.
Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I thought I'd catch her off guard.
I
thought maybe I could trick her into paying me a compliment or something. 800-531-3815, toll-free, coast-to-coast, 800-531-3815. Joan, welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
It's always a pleasure.
Gee, thank you.
Even when you don't give me a compliment.
Even when I mean, yeah, which is all the time.
That's the truth. Well, what are we going to have? Is Kiplinger going to have anything to say about Columbia this week?
Oh, yes.
In the new letter.
Absolutely.
The one coming out.
Remember, it happened on Saturday.
Exactly.
So,
no, I understand.
Yeah.
Your letter was ready by in the mail by Friday. I know that. But I'm just saying, in the upcoming letter, are you guys going to have anything to say about Columbia?
Absolutely, but I can't, you know, scoop
well, we're not
ourselves.
Gonna, I know. I'm
you
not
know,
asking. I didn't ask you what it was. I said, are you going to have
I can pledge to you that we will.
Okay, because you actually wrote the letter this week, didn't you?
Well, yes. I mean, with a lot of help. I mean, yeah. I am physically putting it together. I'm sort of just the person who keeps the trains running on time.
See, what happens, folks, is they rotate this, don't they? I mean,
yes, they do.
You write some of the things that we talk about, folks, Joan writes. And obviously there are a number of editors up there that
and I write most of the letter. I just can't do it all myself.
Right. But occasionally, what is it, every month or so, every 6 weeks or so?
It's a couple of months.
You're on the desk, as they call it, and that's where you're responsible for putting the letter together.
Yes. Physically putting it together.
In addition to writing the pieces that she contributes to, she has her area of expertise, and others have theirs. And you can find, and one of the ways, by the way, to folks, if you're interested, one of the ways to find out about all that is when you subscribe, you can go online to their behind the scenes articles, and you can see who writes some of this stuff.
When you subscribe, it's good. It doesn't hurt to get the online version too, because you sure get a lot more information.
Well, that's exactly right. You get the background on some of the snippets that we talk about. But anyway, the point I just thought maybe after all these years of talking about Kiplinger, people might be interested in a little bit about how this thing works.
Yes.
It's not exactly like the same thing as what they say about politics and sausage.
No, it's not quite that ugly.
Two things
looking,
you never want to see made, but it's not exactly like that. It's close, but not quite.
No, it's fun. It's fun.
Okay, the big news, that's still the big news, Joan, that you guys reported on this week, we'll talk about Columbia some next week, is what you're calling the war, or I should say a war, in Iraq.
Right, and as your listeners know, the big news right this week since we went to press was Secretary of State Powell's speech yesterday to the United Nations where he laid out our evidence and made our case.
Does Kiplinger feel his evidence was compelling?
Well, I haven't checked with the staff. I did have a good conversation with Austin Kiplinger, who I know has been on your show before.
Yep, he's the patriarch.
And he seemed to think there was some pretty compelling evidence, though, mainly of chemical weapons as opposed to and biological as opposed to nuclear.
Well, what I got from his speech wasn't so much... I didn't pay so much attention to what they had as to how they were trying to deceive.
Right. And, you know, they were saying things like, gosh, we got to get this out of here before the inspectors come, you know.
Well, plus they're putting it there on wheels.
Right.
They're rolling around the country, chemical factories rolling around on trucks.
Exactly.
And so, to me, it's not so much a matter of what they have, although obviously that's important, but it's the intent of what they're doing with what they have when they... When they've actually agreed to disarm, they've agreed to not have those things, and they've also agreed to comply with the inspectors, and obviously they haven't done that. Now, what does that tell you about that regime?
Well, it's everything that we feared it was.
And so what it tells us is exactly that they're capable of doing whatever they want to do, regardless of what they promised to do and what the rest of the world wants them to do. And so then... whether they have nuclear or not, it's just a matter of whenever they get it, they'll do whatever they want to with it.
Right. And if you remember, Kiplinger laid this out months ago saying that Saddam would appear to be cooperating to buy time. And he certainly, you know, he seems to be letting the inspectors in to do their job and all that, but they're really not getting to see what they need to come to see.
Right. Well, one of the things that I'd like to point out, Joan, from my own perspective, is to take issue a little bit with the wording that you used. But it's the wording that many people are using these mm-hmm. days. So maybe this makes me on the outside. But you called it a war in Iraq. Well, I say the issue that I'm taking with you is that I don't think there's going to be a war with Iraq. There may be a fight. There may be a battle. There may be a skirmish for a little while. But I think that, you know, we're in sort of the middle of the week this week. By the middle of next week, we could say, well, that didn't take long.
Well, and remember, you know, in Korea...
That's not a war, Joan. I'm sorry.
Right. And remember, in Korea, that did take several years. But with, what did we call it, a police action?
Well, that was a police action. But that actually was. But I'm talking about something that's not going to take long. I mean,
why do you think it's not going to take long? I'm just curious. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just curious.
Because of the difference in the superiority of the world's military compared to Iraq's military. Because, in my opinion, there are only a few people over there who are propping up this regime headed by Saddam Hussein, and the rest of the folks over there, I know Iraqis. The Iraqis I know would not be happy living under a guy like Saddam Hussein.
Right, right.
And so what I'm getting at is we don't, the Iraqi people, I don't get the sense that the Iraqi people have any national pride that's headed up by Saddam Hussein.
Right.
So you see what I'm getting at? I mean, I don't see the citizens fighting tooth and nail against the rest of the world. I don't see that happening. I think we're going to have there's going to be a few strategic things to happen, and it might take a few days, but it's not going to be 100 days.
Well, I always remember the war in the Persian Gulf. When we went to war, we thought, well, okay, the war started. We're going to hunker down for war, and what did it last? What, a couple of weeks?
Well, I thought it lasted a little longer than that. Maybe
not much.
I've forgotten how long. But anyway,
could have been a month, but that's no more than
right.
That.
But exactly, and this one won't last that long. But the point, and the thing is, here's the thing, Joe. I still say that I'm still sticking to my prediction that it won't even come to that.
Okay.
I still am sticking to my prediction that we won't actually have to go in the way
yeah.
a lot of people are thinking.
So, what do you think will happen to Saddam?
I think he'll take a one-way bus ticket out of there. either spiritually or in the physical sense. One way or the other.
Okay.
20 after. I'm on the wrong side of the clock. 20 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We got a lot more to talk about. 800-531-3815. We're back at 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. Hope you're like me. I just can't get enough of Carlos Santana. Aren't you, Joan? You're that way, aren't you?
Oh, I love Santana, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know, Santana has put out albums in the last 20 years. Have you heard that?
Yeah, but
okay.
they're not classics.
Some of them are good, too.
They're not classics yet. See, this is the classics show.
Jim...
This is from the soundtrack of my life. 800-531-3815. Kiplinger has a website, kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G.
If you have a request, make a call.
ER.com. Yeah, exactly.
But don't request anything in the last 20 years.
Okay, let's talk about what Kiplinger says is going to happen when this quote, I'm holding my little fingers up here, folks, to do the quote thing, this war happens.
Yeah.
What's going to happen, Joe?
Well, I guess what we were trying to lay out is what you think the impact will be on your business. And of course, if we have said that energy costs are going to spike during the war and then go lower, I have to say they're at least at the gas pump, they're darned high right now.
I think
now.
It's already happening.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, this is already happening.
Yeah. It was interesting to me also the discussion of the dollar, that the dollar will stay weak during the war.
Yeah.
And then, but we say it will rally afterward. I think, you know, the euro's really been gaining against the dollar recently. Very interesting.
Well, I'm still trying to become a student of currency issues, but you know, the dollar is weak. Part of the reason the dollar is weak right now is because of lack of confidence in the U.S. economy.
Right. And, of course, the stock market yesterday rallied briefly after Powell's speech and then kind of dropped back down again. So
yeah.
We're not getting any momentum there.
Well, see, what I think is happening is it's just the whole world is sort of pent up over this thing. I mean, I wish the U.N. and whoever, the U.S., would do whatever we're going to do so we can get it behind us. I mean,
yeah.
You know, let's do something, if, you know, almost if it's wrong. I don't obviously don't want to do the wrong thing, but the thing is we need to get this behind us. I mean, the literally, I think the world economy, to some degree, is sort of on hold almost in terms of, you know, any kind of real hopefulness until this thing's over with.
No, absolutely no question about it, yes.
Yeah. So, folks, that sounded like Joan agreed with me on that. That's a rare moment. Let's run up a flag on that one.
Right. Mark
okay.
it on your calendars.
Short-term interest rates, the Fed, you're talking about, you thinking the Fed's going to drop rates again?
Well, during the conflict, we think maybe a quarter point just to sort of boost spending a little bit to keep the economy going during the war.
Boy, there's so many things on this first page I disagree with you on. That's another one.
You have the right to be wrong. It's okay.
but we do need to pay attention to these energy costs, folks, And you know, Joan, last week we actually talked about locking in rates.
Yes, we did.
Freight rates.
Yeah.
So we've been warning you about this, folks, and it's something to still think about. You might want to pay attention. But I'll tell you, Joan, if my predictions are right, the last half of the year we're not going to have to worry about paying too much for fuel.
Oh, because gas prices are going down.
I think crude prices will come back down.
Yeah.
And there may actually be some ripples.
Well, I think we agree
with
you on that.
I think there may be some ripples to the economy from a collapse standpoint. It may be, I mean, if it goes to 50, as you guys predict, it might go $50 a barrel.
Yeah.
6 months from now, it could be at 18. That's a collapse.
Wow, that is.
You know? And now I'm not a petroleum expert by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just basing it on what I think is going to happen 6 months from now. All the smart people I know, Joan, including some of your folks, are saying that the second half of this year is going to be a turnaround, a period.
Yes.
We'll be a full quarter on the other side of whatever we're going to do in Iraq. The IT people, the information technology folks are predicting a strong second half in 2003.
Right.
And, you know, we could be poised, if we can get this Iraq thing cleaned up, this thing behind us, I really believe that we're poised for one heck of a 2004.
Boy, let's hope so. That would be terrific.
Well, and it'll be good, Joan. This is off the letter a little bit, but it'll be good because we've taken 3 years to recover and to clean out some dead wood and to learn how to be profitable in the 21st century.
Yes,
that's an important thing that we and the marketplace have had to learn how to do is to operate successfully in the 21st century marketplace. There's so many changes that we've seen.
That's right.
Just in the last 3 years, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very true.
Okay, let's move on down. Now, tell us about the National Reserve and the Reserve and the National Guard story. Tell us that story, Jim.
Well, and in fact, I just saw on the news last night. From my great state of Virginia, they're actually calling up a bunch more that are just about to leave now.
Yeah.
However, the downside is, and I know everybody wants to support the effort, but. There's tens of thousands of people going and leaving businesses.
Yeah.
And if you've talked about this before, many leaving small businesses, many leaving very small businesses.
Small business owners. Well, some owners.
Yeah. And not just for a couple of weeks or a month, but maybe for a year or more. I mean, some are being told they won't be back till next year.
I know a small business whose executive secretary was in the reserves in the Army. And they called her up over a year ago, and she's still gone.
Gee.
So one of the things that's, Joan, I wore the uniform for 15 years. A number of those years in the reserves, I was a commander, and I believed in what I did, and I still believe in that. But if we're going to continue to depend so heavily on a reservist, we've got to come up with another plan for all people affected by it.
Yeah, we sure do.
Stand by. 29 after. We're going to be right back with Joan Pride right after these messages. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. And Steely Dan takes us out.
Now back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted this year's Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
I love it when that opener comes up when Jones here. 800-531-3815. Mr. Humble, glad to be with you. Joan Pride's here, too. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Letter, the outstanding publication that's been around in their 80th year now. Joan hasn't been with them quite that long.
Thank you.
And folks, don't forget that their website is kiplinger.com, and you can subscribe to all of their publications, or one of them, any one of them, pick one. The weekly letter is the Kiplinger Letter, and that's the one that's been out for in their 80th year now. We're gonna celebrate that anniversary. And I've already talked about that, Joan. Next September, we're gonna talk about that, and that'll also be Mr. Kiplinger's 84th or 5th birthday.
I think he currently is 84, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's going to be his 85th birthday. We celebrated his birthday a couple of times on the show before. Anyway, their publications, also they have five weekly letters, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter, and then they've got a magazine.
It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And wherever newspapers are sold, usually magazines, you can buy it there on the stands, that one. And also, they got a toll-free number. Go ahead, Joan.
Yes, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Check it out, folks. And when you get there, don't forget to ask for the 30-day free trial. They'll give that to you. Compliments of me and Kiplinger, of course. Joan, you know, one thing, we were talking about the effects of the reservists being called up on the economy, but there's something else to think about that you don't hear a lot of people talking about. A lot of police officers are in the reserves.
Ooh.
A lot of firefighters in the reserves.
Okay.
And there are a lot of communities, a lot of small police forces that have lost a good percentage, a high percentage of their people, of their young guys, to the war effort, to the mobilization.
Right.
And so, as you know, in terms of terrorism, Homeland Defense, our police officers are our first line of defense.
Well, absolutely.
So we
weakened
in the deployment of the reserves. We weakened our first line of defense from a terrorism standpoint.
Yeah, that is kind of ironic. But, you know, as you pointed out before the break, if we are going to rely on reservists this heavily, we need a better system.
Exactly. Well, see, we've got a volunteer army. We have had for 30 years almost.
Right.
Actually, about 30 years.
Right.
It was volunteer after I was volunteered, it became a volunteer army. But the thing is that, and I think it works great. I think it's fine. I think there's nothing wrong with it. But if we're going to, but that requires the dependence upon the reserve units, which is also fine. But we've got to come up with a way to make sure that it doesn't hurt other people unnecessarily. For example, a lot of these reservists make more money in their professional lives as they do that they would on active duty. So the families are hurting right now.
Right. That's true.
So we've got to come up with another way to handle that. And I predict that that's going to be addressed before too long, Joan, and probably after this little skirmish.
Sure hope so.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the new things with health care benefits. The unions are raising their heads over increasing copays, aren't they?
Boy, and that's the thing. When you see union negotiations over the next year or so, health care will be the big issue.
It has been really for a long time, hasn't it?
It sure has. But as our health care crisis seems to be worsening, that is becoming a bigger and bigger issue because these companies are becoming crippled by the amount that they're having to spend on health care benefits, and they're trying to get it under control.
Well, Joan, you know, I've said a lot before that if you want to get a big company's business, don't offer to sell them stuff. Offer to take a project or some part of their business off their hands and handle it completely for them. But what that does is that prevents them from having to dedicate an employee for that. For
right.
That project.
They'd be outsourcing. Sure.
Exactly.
Makes a lot of sense.
And the thing is what you just said basically how that manifests is that it costs more sometimes for some of these companies to pay the benefits than it does the salary.
Right, that's right.
Or almost as much. And so it's not the 30 or 40 or whatever a year that they make. It's the other 25 or 30 or whatever that they pay out in retirement and everything else.
Exactly.
So this is a big issue. But the unions, you know, Joan, I'm also predict that this union situation, this the union's not wanting to pay for the extra copay, which has gotten pretty expensive, hasn't it?
Yes.
Maybe I said this when you were on once before. It seems like we may have covered this. But this is going to bring the debate into the 21st century with regard to how we allocate tax advantages for health care.
I think that's a good point.
And I'm glad to see this. So the unions may actually, in their complaining, they may actually be doing something to their own detriment, because it's going to change the way I think we allocate the tax advantages for health care.
Right.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Tony Terrell, stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you that tomorrow, after I continue my discussion on technology, and I'm gonna get into the public policy aspect of technology, which is something that we all, as consumers of technology, especially those who create technology, but those of us who consume technology, we all need to know more about the public policy side. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. And then we're going to visit with Bob Manning, who's one of our top credit experts. And he's going to talk to us about what's going on with regard to debt in America and how that's affecting the economy and you and me. And then after Bob, we'll be visiting with another Bob, Dr. Robert McTeer, who's the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas and a member of the FOMC. And he's going to give us a rundown on what the Fed's going to be up to this year. Looking forward to that. Joan Pryde is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, you guys say that we're not going to be, what is it? Let me see. This is Kiplinger can really turn a phrase.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
The federal estate tax won't be put on death row this year.
Yeah.
Explain that to us.
Oh, all right. Well, the federal estate tax, as you know, is scheduled to be phased out over a number of years, I think through 2009, if I'm not mistaken, around there.
That's right.
But in a weird quirk of the tax laws, that tax cut and a lot of others gets reinstated in the following year after being ended in that year, just because that's the way they do things in Washington.
They're a little crazy.
Joan,
let's don't call it a quirk, because a quirk makes it sound like
mistake,
it was something that
error.
They couldn't avoid. Legislative stupidity.
Yes, exactly. So when you hear them talking about we need to make the estate tax repeal permanent, you know, it doesn't make logical sense. Well, they repealed it. Why do they have to make the repeal permanent if it's going to be repealed? Well, that's why. Mm-hmm. And the president has proposed doing that in his budget. But what we're saying is that it won't get through this year. It's a tricky issue, because you have a lot of Democrats who will say that, you know, the Bill Gateses of the world will get off scot-free because of that. So I'm not sure exactly how that they're going to work that out.
Yeah, and that's an argument that is getting outdated by the minute. As more and more people are invested in the stock market, as more and more people, moms and pops, are realizing that the value of their estate is not so much in the annual profits that they make or in the earnings that they make every year, but it's in the inventory that they paid for six times over in the last 30 years of operating a business. It's in the real estate and the buildings that they've acquired and paid for that's now next to an area that's the price, the value of land has gone up 10 times. Or the family farm, you know, the value of the land has gone up 20 times. And so now they're sitting there on millions of dollars of assets, even though they're only drawing $50,000 a year in a salary.
Right. And there's an easy solution if they really are concerned about making sure that the wealthy pay their fair share of tax. Just exempt everybody below a really high level, like, say, I don't know, $10 million.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how many people are going to have an estate that's more than $10 million?
But see, if they do that, Joan, see, you're trying to see, now here you go making sense.
Sorry.
And you know that doesn't, you know, the people who are against this tax, I'm not even going to call them Democrats, but the people who are against this, cutting this tax, they, you know, they're not going to allow you to talk logically and make sense. That's not going to happen, Joan. But you're exactly right. That's a perfect solution. It has, you know, Joan, you and I could have come up with that in, like, what, 8 to 10 seconds?
Yes, and I'm sure many of your good, smart listeners could have a
Absolutely.
Long time ago. And it's not that they haven't figured that out. It's just that politically you know, it's just not working out that way.
And folks, when you hear things like what Joan just said, that's when you decide, okay, is this person interested in leadership or is this person interested in politics?
Right.
And ne'er the twain shall meet, in my opinion.
Well, you're getting eloquent today.
I know it. Well, I've been around Kiplinger a long time. You know,
you guys can really
turn a phrase here.
Thank you.
Let's give you a little plug for your tax letter tax letter editors. You guys are offering some help for 2002 income tax filing.
Right. As you know, we have our tax letter that comes out every other week, but they do an annual report. It's just I think it's the usual four pages that kind of goes through the 1040 and takes you through step by step and gives you pointers on the different things you have to do on your return. Mm-hmm. And we're offering that free to subscribers of the Kiplinger letter.
Okay, good. And that's how do we get to that?
Okay. Probably the easiest way to do that is go to kiplinger.com/yourtaxes.
All right. Sounds good. And that's if you're a subscriber, that's free. So folks, that could be worth the price of the subscription, so check that out. And don't try to get the 30-day free trial and worm your way into this one. You know, they need to get your money on this.
Okay, got to be bona fide here.
Exactly. Let's move on down and talk about this economic census. What's that? What's that all about?
Well, what we're talking about, you know, there's the regular census.
Right.
But the economic census, I'm sorry?
Counting noses.
Right, exactly. But what they're trying to do here is actually look at the economy. And the interesting thing about that is the data that comes out of this is very, very helpful to businesses when they need to do market research.
Mm-hmm.
And planning.
So are we going to be given the opportunity to participate?
Well, we are saying it was sent to probably if you were going to be participating, you would have already gotten it.
Right.
I'm not
so
sure how many.
So if it's laying on your desk there, folks, Kiplinger says it's worth doing.
Oh, sure.
It's beneficial.
But do it soon because it's due February 12th.
Oh, yeah. It's a good deed that you can do today, folks. I didn't get one, by the way. I don't know. I'm a little hurt that I didn't get one.
Oh, it was lost in the mail, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. It went to my old address from 12 years ago, probably.
Right.
Okay, let's move on over and talk for... Actually, we don't have time to the break. We're coming up on the break. When we come back, folks, after these messages, we're going to talk about budget deficits and why we have them and should we be worried about them. And that's going to be coming up right after these messages with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, Tintill. Stay with us.
Ooh, I bet you wondered how I knew. I'll show plans to make me with some. Should have told you by now.
We're back at 7 till. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, your favorite host, I'm sure. Right, Joan?
Absolutely.
Work with me here, Joan.
We're going
into the bonus round.
It's not always easy.
Got to pick up the pace here.
Not always easy.
Why isn't Washington worried about persistent budget deficits, Joan?
That's the question.
That's the question Kiplinger and inquiring minds want to know.
Well, I guess the argument is that if you look at, you know, you hear these numbers and they sound huge, $200 billion, $300 billion, and when they were spoken back in the Reagan years, they were huge, but now they are less huge because they are a much smaller part of GDP.
Right.
They're only 2.8% of gross domestic product, mm-hmm. compared to 5 to 6% back in the Reagan years. So that's a substantial difference.
Right. And the federal debt, even though, you know, one of the things we have to remember, Joan, is that all debt is not bad. If it weren't for debt, small business couldn't do what they do.
Well, that's true.
We have to borrow money.
Right.
And that's basically, that's debt. And sometimes we have to do, and if you take it into, if you look at it in the way the government looks at it, all debt is deficit, would be deficit spending for most of us, because we would be borrowing more than we are earning, even though we're paying it out over time.
That's right.
You see what I mean? So from a strict standpoint, it's deficit spending.
Yeah.
So that's the way I look at government deficits. And when we've got the ability to come out of deficits the way this economy does, you know, if sometimes, in fact, some dovish economists, Joan, will say that deficits can be actually, there actually can be a time when deficits are good for an economy.
Really?
Yeah. when the government needs to help out with the economy, for example. But you guys also say long-term interest rates are going to remain low.
Well, that's, we're saying that they do remain low now. I mean, that's why deficits don't matter. We're not forecasting that they will remain low.
Mm-hmm.
See, we're saying that that's another reason that politicians can point to for why higher deficits aren't going to be a problem. And then the other reason, of course, is that the president believes that a couple of years of economic growth, you know, stimulated by the tax cuts he's proposing, will end up fueling the economy enough so the deficits will fade away.
Right.
But there's a but here. You know, you have some looming, is it gorillas or elephants in the room attention to,
mm-hmm.
and they're called Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
Right. Those are the two, as you say, the elephants in the living room that people are denying, that we're sort of in denial about, and they're going to come back and bite us one of these days, aren't they?
Boy, no, great analogy there.
Yeah,
yes, these elephants will bite us, and that's at some point they're going to have to be spending reforms. They're going to have to be reforms needed to these programs. The sooner the better. But this is sort of something that Congress tends to defer because it's going to be very difficult, very controversial.
Well, and they're deferring it, Joan, because of what we said a few minutes ago when we compared the difference between leadership and politics.
Well, and I've always said Congress is a lot like college students. You know, they don't do their term papers till the 5 minutes before they have to be turned in.
Right, and
when
that
it's
5 minutes, and that 5 minutes doesn't happen to be even on some of their rotations right now.
Right,
I mean
right.
They're actually already thinking, you know, that's going to be like 2020. I'm going to be long gone by then.
Exactly. Sure.
And that's where the leadership vacuum comes in, you know, when we got more politicians than leaders.
Right.
Folks, let's elect leaders to Congress. Let's elect. I'm not saying that there are no leaders in Congress. I'm just saying that
not
there are
enough.
A lot.
There's
an awful
enough.
Lot of politics up there.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move over on page four and continue this thought on the tax issues. What are some things that I only got about 30 seconds or so. Tell us about what you guys say Congress is going to be talking about with regard to taxes. This
actually, this section is sort of saying what will be talked about in addition to taxes,
mm-hmm.
Such as scale down. There will be mental health parity legislation, but it'll be scaled down. There will be renewal of the welfare reform law, which I think everybody would be interested in, although it'll be a short-term renewal, and they'll have to come back and look at that again.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad news is I don't think they're going to be able to get to an issue that I know is important for your listeners, which is allowing banks to pay interest on business checking accounts.
Yep.
I get a lot of calls on that.
And see, that's another antiquated law.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. And folks, Joan, you and I have talked about this before.
Right.
It was put into force in the 30s. Keep people from moving their accounts around,
right,
and causing instability in the banking community. We don't have that anymore.
Well, you know what? Big companies do it through sweep accounts.
That's
they
exactly
get around the law.
That's exactly right.
And if we had another hour, I'd mention one more item, which is minimum wage. But since we don't have another hour,
oh,
I won't.
Darn. We'll do it next time. Thanks,
okay.
Joan. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She'll be back next week. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every single member of our military standing a post wherever you are around the world. God bless you. God be with you. We are so proud of you. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.